My neighbor boy is in kindergarten, and about every other day, if I'm out, he comes over and tells me what he's learned at school and to see if I know what he is just now discovering. And he's taking me through every letter of the alphabet and what sound each letter makes. You know, he's really been having fun with that, and I play along with great amazement. Wow! And lately, he's into numbers now. On his bike, he made the figure 8 in my driveway, and he thought that was pretty cool. He was proud of that. So then, on his bike, he did the number 6, the number 9, the number 1, and 3, and so on. He did all the numbers. And then, a couple days later, I was winterizing my pond in the backyard, and he came over so excited that now he can count by 5s. And he demonstrated. He counted all the way up to 60 by 5s. And then he counted by 2s. He showed me he could do that. Counting by 3s was a bit more challenging for him. But anyway, I asked if he could count to 2 by 1s. And he looked at me kind of funny, and then he started laughing. He knows his neighbor is weird. He knows I'm a weird guy. But I tease him a lot. And anyway, I take great delight in what he's discovering and the way he's developing, and even more that he wants to share it with me, the old guy who lives next door, you know. And we have a great time. Occasionally, as we're talking, I fascinate him with a Bible story. He hasn't heard very many. And I thank God for our friendship. And the conversations and the opportunity just to share with him. He was telling me that he's looking forward to Christmas while we were talking the other day, because he loves all the presents. He's looking forward to Thanksgiving for the food, but at Christmas he loves all the presents. And I said, do you know why we celebrate Christmas? I said, it's Jesus' birthday. Did you know that? And he was shocked. Christmas? Is Jesus' birthday? I said, yeah, it is. And he said, don't you think it's strange that it's Jesus' birthday and we get all the presents, but he doesn't get any? He doesn't get any presents? He was mystified by this. Anyway, here's what I want you to think about. Maybe we should learn to count like my little neighbor friend. Because when life is as challenging as it has been in this year, a year that many people would like to forget, we need to learn to count the good things that God is doing and rejoice. Because it's so easy to focus on all the things that are going wrong, all the duress in our lives. We need some joy and celebration. We need Thanksgiving, don't we? And a thankful spirit reshapes our perspective and our attitudes. And I don't know if you know it or not, but Thanksgiving shapes your generosity. And so I think it's a good thing for us to learn to develop. This pandemic has reminded us how quickly we can just lose it all. But also it reminds us how adequately God can provide, even in difficult times. And the pandemic reveals how selfishly we can hoard. But at the same time, we've also seen how generous we can be, even in uncertain times. How can we multiply Thanksgiving? I mean, how do we keep it going? How do we increase Thanksgiving, producing gratitude in other people around us? How could this Thanksgiving, where many of our family plans might have been scaled back quite a bit, how can we still be thankful? How can it be the most thankful time ever? Let me call your attention today to 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 through 15. In the New Testament, there's 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. It's a letter from the Apostle Paul to the church at Corinth. And the passage here that we're going to look at is a Thanksgiving passage, really. It teaches us to count. To count. And you'll also see it connects generosity with thankfulness. So let's take a look at what Paul says, starting with verse 6. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, that's a lot of alls, you will abound in every good work. And it is written, he has scattered abroad the gifts to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You'll be made rich in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. This service that you perform is not only supplying the needs of God's people, but it's also overflowing in many expressions of thanks to God. Because of the service by which you have proved yourselves, men will praise God for the obedience and for the obedience that accompanies your confession of the gospel of Christ and for your generosity in sharing with them and with everyone else. And in their prayers for you, their hearts will go out to you because of the surpassing grace God has given you. Well, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. Now, this teaches us to begin to make the gratitude adjustment. And to do that, we need to count our blessings. Count blessings. Most people have been complaining in this distressful year, but two Sundays ago, I suggested that for 30 days that we would all pause and write down blessings that we're thankful for each day for 30 days. And it's going to shift our perspective and our focus on the goodness of God. I hope you've been doing it. You know, Paul is essentially telling the Corinthians to do the same thing. He's just saying, count your blessings. Don't you see what God's done here? There's a lot of evil going in the world, but we can stop and see the abundance of God's grace overflowing and all his provision in our lives. And he reminds the Corinthians that God's grace is abounding to you. You have all that you need, and he gives gifts even to the poor. He supplies seed for the planter and bread for food. He's made you rich in every way. And so just count your blessings. You know, the everything, the all, the abundance of this passage is just amazing. Sometimes living in a culture of plenty, we get confused about what a necessity is. And our expectations are high and we begin to take things for granted. I admit I've grown accustomed to certain preferences, or should I say luxuries, and I expect them. I'm used to them. And we kind of whine and complain about toilet paper shortage. We might have to use the cheap, rough stuff, or if we can even find that, and that's frustrating to us. But did you know that even before the pandemic, the United Nations reported that only 30% of people in the world have toilet paper to use? Only 30%? I found that astounding. More than 2.6 billion people around the world don't even have access to any safe sanitation. Instead of using toilets connected to sewer lines, most leave their waste on the ground or in a ditch or in a pit, some kind of outdoor toilet. A number in this room grew up without toilets and toilet paper in the house. You had to use the outhouse, right? And we expect what we view as necessities these days, most people in the world don't even have. They don't have access to it. We do take so much for granted, and we must make the gratitude adjustment. Enumerate the good things that you do have and stop focusing on what you don't have. It'll change your heart. Count your blessings. Did you read the amazing story of Donna Barber? She got home from work. She went out to tend the flowers in her flower garden before supper. And she walked across the patio. And suddenly, she just felt this powerful blow in the right side of her neck, like she'd been hit with a baseball bat or something. And confused, she reached up. And to her horror, she felt an arrow protruding from her neck. Man, imagine your wife coming running into the house screaming with an arrow sticking out of her neck. Her husband called 911 and they airlifted her to a trauma hospital. Evidently, a young man in the neighborhood was practicing in his backyard with a compound bow, and thankfully it was only practice arrows, which have smoother rounded tips, not the kind that you use for hunting. And so one arrow ricocheted and then traversed several backyards, striking Donna in the neck. And amazingly, the arrow pierced exactly between the carotid artery and the jugular vein, and it's space about a quarter of an inch between, evidently, and it pushed the blood vessels aside without nicking either one. And the doctor says she was lucky to be alive, but she insisted, "I'm not lucky. I'm blessed. The Lord is watching over me." And prayers were going up by her family and friends as she went through this ordeal. But after the surgery to get everything taken care of, the arrow and everything, the surgeon revealed something they discovered in the process unexpectedly. Donna had a brain tumor that no one would have known was there had it not been for the arrow. So there was more surgery. The tumor was safely removed. Eventually, she returned home recovering, thanking the Lord for the traumatic way that they found that tumor that saved her life. And each year, she had a follow-up MRI because of the tumor. And so, astoundingly, in the second year, the MRI revealed now she had a brain aneurysm. Now, these are rarely discovered before it's too late, before they burst. And they were able to surgically repair that aneurysm before it ruptured and killed her. And so she was humbly counting her blessings again. The arrow that should have killed her actually saved her life twice. People kept telling her, "Man, what a coincidence. Wow, you are so lucky." And she said, "No, no, this is God's grace. This is God's blessing. And I'm thankful." When my family suddenly lost 60% of our income and all our benefits, we had to make a significant lifestyle adjustments, and many of which have remained since that time. And to be honest with you, for about 2 years, the numbers just didn't add up to me. And I don't know how we were able to meet all our responsibilities, except that God was simply providing for us in amazing ways. Somehow the dollars seemed to stretch. Somehow the bills seemed to get taken care of. Maybe they were less. Sometimes unexpected bills, unexpected gifts came to help us. I remember God granted Brenda several temporary jobs. She'd had the same professorship for 29 years, and now suddenly without. So we had... she had these temporary jobs. In fact, at one point, she was working five different jobs all at the same time, different part-time jobs. But somehow, God granted. He took care of our needs. All our needs were met, and we had money to give at the same time. Just as this passage in 2 Corinthians teaches, we keep giving thanks, and He keeps blessing, and so we keep giving. And so we must ask ourselves a very serious question today, a question that will, I think, reveal a lot about ourselves. What am I grateful for? What is it I'm really grateful for? Can I make a few suggestions today to stimulate your imagination? I suggest that you count your physical and material blessings. Your home and clothes and food and furnishings and decor and all the media and technology and the tools and coats and bed and car and properties and appliances and electricity and plumbing and grooming and hygiene supplies and shower and bath and household supplies. And you get mail and movies and books and dishes and sports equipment and medicine and your heartbeats, right? You have eyes that see. You have the ability to hear. You can speak and taste and touch. Your whole human body, the way it functions, is absolutely amazing. And the way the world and the universe all work together in amazing detail. We have so much physically to be thankful for, but we should also count our relational blessings. Your precious family, your spouse, your children, your parents, your relatives, but also your friends and neighbors, your church family, your team, your coworkers, your classmates. We have a lot of special relationships in our lives. And count your financial blessings. your income, your job if you have one, your bank account, your savings, your Social Security, your IRA or retirement investments, your Medicaid and Medicare, your insurance, your properties, all your assets, count them up. And then count your service blessings. Sometimes we don't think about it, but it's really great that we have trash pickup and doctors and hospitals and libraries and schools and police and fire protection, emergency personnel of all kinds, sanitation, roads, transit systems, courts, government, prisons, vaccines, stores, all kinds of services that are at our disposal to help our lives and make them better and abundant. And thank the Lord, count your experiential blessings. That wonderful vacation that you'll never forget. The sunset, the ocean, the mountains, the colors of fall, the flowers of spring, the birds and the animals that you see, the education that you've gotten, and laughter. Isn't that a great gift? And music, sports, your wedding, childbirth, accomplishments, challenges, freedoms, and privileges we enjoy. There's so many experiences that God allows us to have that are so wonderful. We need to thank Him for that. Count your protection blessings. We probably don't think about these things very often, but I'm talking about the things that might have been, but God protected you from suffering. You know, falls survived, accidents avoided, tragedies escaped, embarrassing blunders unnoticed, seductions overcome, illnesses averted, relationships avoided or secured, bullets dodged. Have you ever thought about this? I wonder about this stuff. And I'm grateful. I think about all the things God has protected me from. You know, I remember when I was a kid, my family was traveling. It was night. We ran into blizzard conditions. I remember how heavy the snow was coming down, and my dad was feeling uneasy about it. And so for whatever reason, he took a different route. I think it would take us longer, but he thought it might be safer. And so we did that. It wasn't the typical route that we would take. When we finally arrived at our destination, only to find out that a tractor trailer jackknifed on the route that we had originally been traveling, and it happened about the time that we would have been going through there, several multi-car pileup, and we could have easily been in that disaster. So we thank the Lord for protecting us, and we prayed for the suffering. Thank the Lord for His protection blessing. And also count historical biblical blessings, things that have helped shape and build our faith. David defeating Goliath, Daniel saved from the lions, the whole city of Nineveh repenting. Imagine that. Moses and Israel crossing the Red Sea on dry ground. Noah preserved in the flood. Gideon defeating the Midianite hordes. Esther and Mordecai saving the people of God from annihilation. God's sending fire from heaven to consume the sacrifice for Elijah. Preserving the Messianic Davidic line through Ruth. And Boaz, the Messianic line. And then God keeping His promise of Isaac's birth to Abraham and Sarah, even in their very old age. And then, of course, we have a virgin who conceived of God. Jesus grew up and He died for us. He rose from the grave. These great biblical historical moments that shape our faith. Most of all, I want to encourage you to count your spiritual blessings. It's easy to count the physical things, material things, but what about hope and joy, peace and love? What about the Holy Spirit or heaven? There's a lot to thank the Lord for there. And the church, there's wisdom and victory over temptation and the very presence of God. The Bible, the ability to pray to God and answered prayer. How about counting worship and fellowship and accountability and encouragement and examples and mentors in our lives? And what about ministry opportunities and even the spiritual gifts that enable us to serve? And what about joy of seeing others come to faith and the spiritual triumphs and baptism and trustworthiness of God in our lives, His guidance, His grace, His forgiveness? How could we ever thank Him for that? The gospel that He's given us to share with others, the opportunities to give and to see the results of those gifts in people's lives. We have so many spiritual blessings, eternal, meaningful blessings. Counting blessings helps us realize our superabundance in the Lord, and it boosts our faith, and it gives us joy, and it fills us with gratitude and even generosity, even in times like 2020. So count blessings, but this passage also teaches us to count opportunities. Count opportunities. Paul reminds us that as recipients of God's grace and his blessings, we have opportunities to give back. And it's not compulsory. It's not demanded. It's not forced of us. We are free to give what we want. Free to give willfully, joyfully, lovingly, and generously to God and to bless others. In fact, Paul says, hey, person that reaps sparingly, reaps sparingly. It's a principle, you know. If you sow generously, you're going to reap generously. God has not only met our needs, but he supplies enough for us to share with others. His grace overflows through us. And he provides the gift so that we can abound in every good work, Paul says. He makes us rich in every way, so that we can be generous on every occasion, every opportunity. Now, making us rich in every way, what does that mean? That means more than financially and materially. It means more than the temporal resources that we use. He makes us rich in grace, in love, in abilities. He rich in willingness to bless others, rich in character and compassion, rich in purpose, rich in biblical wisdom, rich in the gospel that we have to share with others. So we need to pause and seriously ask ourselves another important question today, a very revealing question. What am I gathering for? Why do I do this? What am I gathering for? Because Jesus told about a rich landowner who realized his success and abundance was just overflowing, and so he decided to build bigger barns to store up what he had harvested, and now he could relax, saying to himself, eat, drink, and be merry. But God called this man a fool because that very night his life was demanded of him, and then who's going to have all this stuff? What good's it going to do him? It begs the question, who or what am I gathering for? For myself? For my family? You know, I haven't gone fishing in years, to be honest with you. But over the past 4 months, I've had the opportunity to actually go fishing a few times. And I'm usually pretty good at drowning worms. That's the kind of fisherman I am. But I don't have a rod and reel. I have to borrow. But I got out there and I had a great time anyway. And one afternoon this fall, I was catching bluegill about as fast as my bait would hit the water. This lake was full of them, and they were big. Usually the bluegill I catch are scrawny little things, but these were so big I could barely reach my hand around them to get the hook out. I was catch and release. I wasn't eating them or keeping them. And anyway, I caught 20 an hour that day. But you know what I really wanted? I wanted to catch the bass I was seeing out there in the water. I wanted to catch some. And so the next day I switched to I switched from live bait to a crankbait lure, and the moment that plug started wriggling through the water, man, a bass hit it. Bam! I was on the line, and man, I was so excited. It was the biggest bass I've ever caught in my life. It was more than 20 inches, 5 pounds about. You could fit a baseball in that thing's mouth. Now, for some of you, it wasn't a trophy bass. Some of you anglers, you really know how to do it. But for me, it was my best, and I was so excited, and it was so fun catching that fish, so much so that I was so exhilarated. I wanted to catch more, and so I kept trying. I kept trying. I kept fishing, and I caught about 20 bass over the next hour. So I had a great time. But as much as I was exhilarated by that fishing, I want to tell you, I found something that is exceedingly, abundantly more exhilarating, and that's to fish for people, for souls, for lives. And I get to do that every day. In fact, we all have that opportunity that the Lord's given us. I get the indescribable thrill of preaching every Sunday. I don't know, you know, I get to do what I love most. And it is the most audacious thing But it is the most thrilling thing. I marvel that God took a guy who trembled uncontrollably when he was up in front of people and made a preacher out of him. How do you explain that? I marvel. I get the opportunity to sow gospel seeds, to disciple people, to discover Jesus, and to grow in Jesus. God graciously gives you these same kind of opportunities to share your faith with your circle of acquaintances. We have great opportunities before us that God is granting us that we need to rejoice in. Every time I get a newsletter from Glenn and Jessica Shady, our missionary partners in Paris, I get excited as they share stories about conversations they've had and relationship they've tried to build so they can share Jesus, maybe an encounter on the metro or an open door with a neighbor, a woman at a coffee shop, or a family their children go to school with, or a person who just suffered a loss, and they get into a dialogue and they count these conversations as exhilarating opportunities, wonderful blessings from God. Every relationship built, every spiritual dialogue, you see, is an opportunity. And one day, they'll be counting disciples made and churches planted. And you're participating. You are. Your generosity through our church enables them to be the voice of the gospel where it's rarely heard. People don't hear about Jesus. So every opportunity they have is your opportunity as you give generously. I'll tell you, I love that when given the opportunity, you respond. I love this church. You do respond. And you know what? We are not the most financially capable church family. You know, we have limited resources. I get that. But you're always so willing. You are ready and willing to pack meals for the Navajo Nation, and at $30 a pop, you are willing to get in there and do the work and pay that price to do it. And we didn't get to do it because of COVID-19, but as soon as things clear up, we're going to get an opportunity and we'll get those meals packed. When we sent a small team to Louisiana a couple months ago to help with the hurricane relief, you pitched in and you sponsored us. And when school supplies were needed for families, you graciously shared. We have recovering addicts in our congregation leading an NA group and an AA group every week to help others recover from their addictions. Some have provided hospitality for those in need. Some of you have visited the isolated in nursing homes, even through the window. Some have used your vacation time to go on a mission trip to Mexico to construct church buildings and to teach children the Bible. Several of you love volunteering to help with our youth and children's ministries here, or I know some of you have continued to tithe even after you lost your job, and many are sacrificially given. Many are faithful givers, gratefully seizing the opportunities that God gives us. You're so thankful, and you're willing to use what God has given you to bless. It's grateful people. Those of us who realize the immensity of the grace we've received from the Lord, so much that we know we don't deserve it, but we're so thankful that we just love to bless others. And we realize one other great grace in this. God lets us share in His purpose, in His good work. He invites us. He welcomes us to join Him. And in fact, He gifts us to do so. He gives us what we need to do it. And so count the opportunities that He gives and return thanks. And then count the outcomes. That's what we learn from this passage. Count the outcomes. And you reap what you sow, remember? You reap what you sow. I have to tell you that I've praised God many times this year as I've witnessed your generosity and as I've seen you, the gifts that you've given and the things you've done to help other people. And this counting outcomes thing is important. It prompts another serious and quite revealing question about ourselves. What am I giving for? To feel good about myself? To impress somebody? Or is there a higher objective? Paul tells us that our generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. He says that over and over in this passage. You know what? There are people being baptized in Venezuela and coming to the Lord. People who are being fed physically in Venezuela. Leaders are being trained in Venezuela. Churches are being planted. And they're all thanking God. And that's because of gifts that we've sent. In Kosovo, our missionary partners, the Chestnut Salmonis, are delivering food to desperate, hungry people, giving them Bibles at the same time, these desperate Muslim families, and they're welcoming those Bibles. These Muslims are welcoming, getting a Bible, and glad if they would pray over them. And so they pray for them, and they give thanks to God. I know that Christ Church of the Deaf and our Deaf Institute have expressed thank you to God for what we have shared in order to enable them. Lives are being saved and changed, and people are thanking God in so many ways for you and your gifts to the Western Hills Church. Paul says, this service that you perform is not only supplying the needs of God's people, but it's also overflowing in many expressions of thanks to God. And I've heard it so many times. I heard it in Pam down in Lake Charles, Louisiana, as we assisted her hurricane cleanup. She videoed our work, and then she videoed us when she asked, she was so amazed, why would you come from Cincinnati to help? And she's so grateful for what we had done. I saw the same curiosity and thanksgiving when we built a ramp for a disabled girl in our neighborhood, when we constructed a fence for a family in Price Hill, when we helped a boy get his burnt hands reconstructed, when we provided clothing for hundreds of people. I've seen it in the grateful expressions of people with whom we've shared groceries so that they can put food on their table for their family. And the biggest thanksgiving that I see comes from people who have found salvation in Jesus Christ because we cared enough to share the good news with them. You're giving thanks to God. Endless thanks. William Barclay observed, many a time when a man was at his wit's end, a gift from someone else seemed to him nothing less than a gift from heaven itself. Man, I've been on the receiving end of that, I can tell you, at times of need, and I thank God for the person he sent to help out. Your gift relieves a need, and it restores faith in people that love and kindness are not dead, and it causes them to thank the Lord. Often this passage, 2 Corinthians 9, is taught with a focus on giving, trying to encourage people to give, but I think the real focus is on the overflowing thanksgiving to God. That's what it seems to be about. That's the goal. Our thankful generosity overflows, and it causes others to turn and thank God. This is about God receiving the glory that is due him. It's about turning people's hearts toward him. Well, this passage concludes in that powerful way. Verse 15, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. There's nothing that compares. Nothing greater than the forgiveness, the salvation that we have received through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. You know what? If you'd like to receive his amazing gift of salvation today, it's a gift. Nothing you deserve. You don't merit it. None of us is good enough. It's something that he gives because he loves us. If you'd like to receive that gift, call me at the number on the screen. I would love to share the good news with you about Jesus.